And how's it going, everybody? Wild guess. Who picked the music there today, Bob?
Tyler, you shouldn't have.
I tried to talk you out of that one. So I imagine you want to talk about Ray here.
Thank you very much, sir.
I don't know how else to lead into it. I got no Ray Price.
That is too. City Lights by Mr. Ray Price. And he is a country legend, and he passed away on Monday. So that was in memory of Ray, the Cherokee cowboy. I saw him twice, once at the Green Bay Casino and another time up at Bowler, Wisconsin, the casino. And he's a legend. He did it in a lot of different ways. He did it with symphony orchestras. He crossed over pop charts. His greatest hit is For the Good Times. And that's City Lights, 1958, Ray Price, R.I.P.
And that's a really cool venue there at the Oneida Casino. I'm not a gambler, haven't been there much, but we checked out Sleep at the Wheel there.
Yep.
When was that, last year?
Yeah, it was, right.
Good band? So what was it like there checking out Ray Price? When was that?
Good crowd. That was in 2011. And then he was shortly thereafter, I read that he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Oh, man.
I talked to him afterward that night, and a couple hundred people, and he's a classic gentleman. He had about eight guys with him in that band, and boy, he still had the pipes, too, at 85 he was at that point.
85 years old, still
Ray,
going strong.
Ray Price out of Mount Pleasant, Texas.
Well, man, I feel ashamed. I had no idea who the guy was before today.
And none of our listeners did either, Tyler, believe me.
Well, if you know Ray Price, let us know. So how are things going, Bob? I imagine you got all your Christmas shopping done.
Yeah, I'll wrap it up Saturday night after we get done working, and then crank it up in the middle of the week. Now, you're spending Christmas where?
We'll be going back home to Western New York. Grew about an hour south of Buffalo. So just for a couple days, see the family. Looking forward to that. Got the annual hockey game, street hockey game in the snow. So that awesome. Should be fun time. But first things first, the Green Bay Packers, Bob, are alive and well. Got to admit, 2 weeks ago when we were doing this podcast, boy, this team looked dead to rights, didn't they, after that Detroit game? And here they are. They kind of control their own fate. They win these final two games, and they win the division. They lose Sunday. Chicago wins. Much different story. Season on the line again. I guess the first question for you, Bob, is 2 weeks ago, could you see Green Bay in this position? Could you see them in a position to still have everything in front of them?
Well, I argued with our colleague Tom Silverstein, and I just kept saying they're not done. There's just no way. The schedule, the way this team has finished seasons, the cold weather, they're always better in December than they are in September.
Mm-hmm.
And as bad as they looked on Thanksgiving, I mean, I knew that was a unbelievably motivated Lion team coming off a bad defeat against Tampa Bay.
Mm.
And they had 10, I figured they'd bounce back 10 days, and, they won, two games by 1 point. But, we knew they could. Dallas has no defense. Atlanta's a shattered team. And the last couple of games they can win as well. So it wasn't out of the question by any means. But they were hurting, right?
Well, and there's still a dark cloud kind of hanging over this team. I mean, we're taping this Thursday night. So don't know how much we're going to get into the quarterback situation, Bob. But we still don't know what's up with Aaron Rodgers. And it was a really interesting day out there at Lambeau Field today. Where Mike McCarthy says that Aaron Rodgers looks great at practice. He looks ready to go. Aaron Rodgers says that he feels good. It's an organizational decision and that there's basically a lot that's out of his hands. So, interesting dilemma here for Green Bay. I mean, as we sit here, it looks like Matt Flynn is going to start another game. Well, let's just talk about Matt Flynn, Bob. I mean, what did you see in his game against Dallas?
No, he outscored the Dallas Cowboys. Let's face it, he put up 37 points. This is a backup quarterback. I mean, he put up 37 points. It's a remarkable achievement. It really is. After a terrible first half, scored 5 touchdowns in a row. And he deserves all the credit in the world. He's got a swagger about him, a confidence, and he leads. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty tough guy. And he threw the ball. He had about 7 or 8 really outstanding passes.
He did. I mean, you can go to the back shoulder throw to Jarrett Boykin. Audible at the 3-yard line. Andrew Corliss is going to take that to the corner. He sends him on a slant. It's a touchdown. And one of the big things that Matt Flynn talked about was not just staying locked in on that first read, getting to the second read, being more decisive, the touchdown to James Jones. He's looking one direction. He comes back to Jones the other direction, scores a touchdown. So, boy, you have to give it up to Matt Flynn. I mean, here's a guy who just banished, cut, let go, forgotten by three teams, including one Buffalo Bills team. And he was really on the fast track to being right there with the likes of Jamarcus Russell, Matt Leinart, Brady Quinn, all these quarterbacks to just kind of hang out on the waiver wire, get a workout here and there. And now he's in position to save the Green Bay Packers season, and he's done that each of the last 2 weeks. I don't know how much more you can ask out of him.
I mean, at halftime, Tom and I both thought it was going to be Tolzien coming out of the tunnel for the third quarter. Now, did you think like that?
I thought that they would stick with Matt Flynn, but I thought it was a very real possibility. I mean, they gave Tolzien the yank there against Philadelphia, and frankly, he played better that half and a series than Flynn did. So, yeah. If you had anything, it was a possibility, but if they stuck with him through that Detroit game, I imagine they can kind of reach that point of no return with Matt Flynn. And I mean, I guess you can kind of see the reasoning behind going with Matt Flynn. He doesn't have nearly as strong of arm as Scott Tolzien or physical ability, but he gives him that ability to make changes at the line, to run the up-tempo if they want, and just that overall sense of calm that he's been there, done that.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he hasn't had many starts, but he's had a few, and he's observed Aaron Rodgers for 5 years, so, yeah.
But, I mean, can he keep doing it? I mean, can this extend another week or two or postseason if the Green Bay Packers need it? Or do they need Aaron Rodgers back?
Well, Flynn's won two in a row. He's at home. Green Bay's dynamite at home in December. You know, certainly he can win another game. Pittsburgh's defense is okay. It's not great. They just lost Lamar Woodley. They got a good defense, middle of the pack, you know, really. Dick LeBeau is a fine coordinator, and he'll try to do some things to unnerve him. They have a very veteran secondary that'll do a bunch of things, but we don't have a spread on this yet. Oddsmakers not put out a line, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Well, while we're on that Cowboys game in Flynn, though, you really have to note the performance by the wide receivers. I mean, way back when you wrote about this potential scenario, you wrote about other players rising up, and it hadn't happened. I think that that's an example of other players rising up. Jordy Nelson just ripping the ball out of a cornerback's hands, having the one-handed catch. Jarrett Boykin, I mean, boy, if you really zero in on some of the routes he ran, he uses his hands so well, in and out of his cuts. Other players did help out Matt Flynn this game.
Let's go to Andrew Corliss, Tyler.
And Andrew Corliss.
Written about him.
Yeah, I mean, 2 weeks ago, his own position coach is kind of calling him out. I mean, it was mainly about the run blocking and some deficiencies there. They needed to see more. They're watching film of wide receivers cracking down on defensive ends, and basically the message is it's all leverage. You have to block this guy. So, I mean, that was the focus. But yeah, he said he wasn't getting enough out of Andrew Corliss, and he has back-to-back career games. I mean, this is the guy that was at JerMichael Finley's hospital bed, you know, after that Browns game. He said he wanted to play for JerMichael Finley, that Finley kind of inspired him, and that's a lofty standard with the way Finley was playing. But these past 2 weeks, I mean, Corliss, 6 catches, 66 yards. The players around Flynn are helping him out, and I think that this offense has proven that without Aaron Rodgers, they can move the ball, they can score points. But I'm going to stop short of saying that they're ready for the Seattle Seahawks or San Francisco 49ers okay. without Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So, all right, well, let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. Last week, 2 weeks ago, against Atlanta, it was Jared Bush getting the big play. Mike Neal sacked fumble before that. This past weekend, Tremont Williams has the big interception that is taken away. Dallas goes down, scores, and then you have to give Green Bay's defense for coming right back. Sam Shields, the interception on Tony Romo, nearly a 65-yard touchdown to Miles Austin, but has the makeup speed. And then Williams ends it with his pick. So I guess kind of the question here is, all right, Bob, under Dom Capers, from 2009 when he first arrived to 2012, no team in the NFL had more interceptions. I believe they were third or fourth in takeaways. And that's been a problem all year. They haven't been forcing, creating turnovers. They have the last 2 weeks when it mattered. Do you buy the whole theory of these things coming in bunches? I mean, we hear that all the time from the Packers. The turnovers come in bunches. Do you buy that? I mean, can this continue? Because let's be real, they're going to need this. Because I don't know if this defense, as constructed, can just shut down teams throughout a postseason run. They're going to need these turnovers, right?
I mean, now they have lost Johnny Jolly, one of their wide bodies, so Boyd's going to have to play in even more, and maybe C.J. Wilson. But I hear what you're saying, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about takeaways, Tyler. I used to think they were luck in the 80s. You know, there were so many more turnovers in the NFL game back then. Teams were they were just looser with the ball. They weren't nearly as well coached. And I think some head coaches just, they felt turnovers were beyond their control. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think back in the Green Bay teams I covered, I bet some of those seasons, on average, NFL games almost had twice as many turnovers as they do now. And you go back into the 40s and 50s, interception totals were incredible. All interception leaders in career single season are all back in the 40s. You know, just willy-nilly with the football. But now, you know, McCarthy has won the turnover game. He's coached it on both sides of the ball, and he's done a great job with that. So you got these picks by Shields and Williams, right? Both of them are tremendous skilled plays. There's no luck involved on either one.
And I think that's worth noting because nationally, the overarching storyline all week really was Tony Romo screwed up again, and it was all on the Cowboys. But when you really watch those plays, those are two great individual efforts by the Packers, right?
I mean, I think so. You know, you got Shields. First of all, you got Clay Matthews not being influenced by the run fake, right? And coming off that thing so fast when Tyron Smith moved down. All right, now he's just all over Romo. All right, he misses the sack. Now at this point, Romo should either run, take a sack, get the third down, do something. But he throws, and the ball wasn't a terrible throw, right? It was a little bit behind him, but it wasn't awful,
right?
But it just Shields with those hands here. I mean, he looked like a wide receiver, which he was for Miami. And he snared the ball away from his body. It was an amazing play. He had absolutely no safety help on that. You got a nine-man box.
Right, exactly. And Dom Capers talked a little bit about that, where he wasn't as quick to criticize Dallas because he said, look, we had nine guys near the line of scrimmage, and some teams are going to take what you give them. And they took that risk. And what about Clay Matthews? As you wrote in your rating the Packers, he was shut down all day. Yeah. But when they needed something out of him, I guess he got a pressure. And
he made a reaction. You know, he's got fantastic instincts for vision, and he saw this thing, and he jumped it, man. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the next one, right? The game-clinching pick. So if we give Williams or Shields, they're both about a 9.5 on degree of difficulty on picks. I really think they are, Tyler. All right, the other one. So, you know, in watching the tape, you see Romo throw that almost blindly, that out. He'll throw it to Witten on that out cut from the slot, or he'll throw it to another receiver. And earlier in the game, Tremont came off his guy deep. He just came off, had a hunch, came off it. And that ball could have been picked, too. That was in the third quarter. All right, so now fast forward to the final one. It's second and one, right? And Tremont's out there, and we know he's wide, and he just kind of has a feeling. He knows Romo.
Before we get into that, Bob, though, you made a good point how Williams kind of had a feel for Tony Romo. So, you know, I just asked Tremont Williams that today. Remember, there was a couple years ago where he said how much he just wanted to take receivers head on. You know, remember late in 2011, he said, I just want to match these guys mano a mano. And that's something he kind of relished. Where this year, he's really kind of embraced playing off, being able to study quarterbacks, study routes. Hmm. And it's kind of led to him being around the ball more. I mean, the Giants game, your game story you had there, he was around the ball. And he's kind of taken that leadership position, wanting guys to do the same thing. But that turnover, that interception, kind of an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he said. He said, quote, "A lot of times when you make plays, you see the ball before, that tends to happen." He said, "You can make plays in press coverage, but most of the times you're going to make it is on deep balls. You know you have a chance if you get your head around and track the ball. You make most of your plays in press coverage on deep balls. But all of the rest of the plays, I think being off with vision helps you a lot." So that's kind of how his game has evolved. Now, you know, back to that play. Degree of fault, I really don't know. It's hard for me to say. I guess I'm not in that Dallas huddle. I'm not as quick to just kind of scapegoat Tony Romo, Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett, which I kind of want to get into your column that you had in Sunday on how the defense was constructed and in comparison to the Seattle Seahawks. Really interesting kind of parallel there on how the Packers kind of got to this point. I mean, how did you get to this column idea, and kind of tell the readers a little bit about it if they missed it?
Well, I just wanted to know, how this defense was constructed, how it was built, you know. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about scheme versus personnel, and I just took some time to examine the Packers' personnel. You know, 4 years ago, and then I went with the best defense in the league, Seattle. I think it's appropriate because Green Bay was probably the best defense in the league in 09 and maybe 2010 also, the way they played in the playoffs. So I just wanted to see how they got so good and where Green Bay is today. Pete Carroll, the general the head coach and in charge of everything, and John Schneider, his general manager, and Scott McLuhan, his top scout. Those three have done a remarkable job, as it turns out. And they have, they've drafted higher than Green Bay most years, but in case after case, round after round, player after player, they've done a better job than Green Bay has. And it's reflected not only in their top line players, but their depth. They have a tremendous defensive depth chart, and Green Bay doesn't right now. And that's really why Green Bay's not playing very well on defense and why Seattle is dominating the league and really is the Super Bowl favorite as we speak.
Absolutely.
I mean, Richard Sherman in the fifth round, you know, we can go on and on. Cam Chancellor in the fifth round. Are you kidding me? These guys are among the top five corners, and Chancellor's among the top eight safeties.
And Jerron McMillan in the fourth round.
Yeah, fifth round. I mean, it's just amazing. Green Bay's best player on defense that they've acquired in the last 4 years is Sam Shields. And you could argue that Seattle has probably acquired anywhere from 5 to 8 defensive players better than Shields in 4 years.
I thought that was an interesting point you made there. Yeah. Well, I mean, 2012, that was the referendum on the defense, right? I mean, in 2011, they give up all those yards. Not a good year statistically for the defense. And what does Ted Thompson do? Well, he says the draft board did its thing, I think was his words. But yeah, he took 6 defensive players in a row. I mean, and let's look at those players. Nick Perry's been solid when he's healthy, but he's still kind of working through that foot injury right now, it seems. We don't know the verdict on him. Jarrell Worthy, the second-round pick, he's back from his torn ACL, but he's a game-day inactive. He's not contributing. Casey Hayward, the other second-round pick, proved he's a great playmaker, could be a great playmaker his rookie season. Had the hamstring issues. He's not on the field. He's on IR. Mike Daniels was an absolute find as an inside rusher. Obviously, a great pick there. Jerron McMillan, cut. Terrell Manning, cut. Am I missing anybody? I think that's all 6.
That's the 6, yeah.
So I imagine you want a little more production out of that group, or at least have some of these guys on the field.
I think we could say that on time. Perry, you're being kind, saying he's solid. That's pretty kind.
How do you think he's played?
I wish I knew more about the foot to really judge that. Mm-hmm. You know? I wish I knew a lot more about a lot of injuries.
Who do you think has played better, Nick Perry or Mike Neal?
Guess I'm going to have to get to that issue after the season with my grades, Ty. I don't know. I want 2 more or 3 more weeks or whatever it is to watch it. I'm not sure. I got to really break down the numbers and think about it.
Okay.
Anything else on the D, Ty?
Well, one thing we haven't really discussed in context with all this is the guy that draws the ire of fans, and that's Dom Capers, the defensive coordinator, who, if you talk to any player in that locker room, or at least the ones I talked to for the story last Sunday, they are completely on board with Dom Capers. They support everything he does, the scheme, you name it.
It was an extremely interesting story, Tyler. You talked to a lot of guys. You talked to some coaches about this guy. Capers is 63 years old, and I've covered this team for a long time, and there are defensive players, for example, over the years, who have started to, one way or another, rip a defensive coordinator that I've covered. So, in your tour here, what did you discover? Where are these players and coaches with Capers?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I've only been covering this team for a few years, but even in my short time, there have been instances where, you know, Charles Woodson, after the San Diego game in 2011, speaks up and says, we have to move Clay Matthews around more. We have to use him in different ways. kind of a pretty mild, benign example. But there are times when players do suggest things. So I think the criticism for a story like this is, well, what else are the players going to say? Hey, they got every right to offer their opinion or you know, something different for the team to do. But, you know, in doing this story, I just didn't run across it. You know, Mike Daniels kind of looked at me like I had three heads. Like, you know, people outside the building, they don't know what they're talking about. People inside here do. We have total faith in the guy. Mike Neal, it was the same thing. I mean, here's a guy who walks into the offices there in the offseason, and they have him switch his position. You know, that's a pretty big career move.
Yeah.
He supported him. And, I mean, Kevin Green, obviously an outside linebacker who played for Capers, coaches with him. I mean, you go down the list, and the support is there. And I think because the results have been there, you know, 2009 to 2012, we talked about the turnovers, 09, highly ranked across the league. So, to me, I think to even the players themselves, problems this season defensively have been a matter of personnel, tackling, not getting off blocks, not getting those interceptions. I guess the one interesting comment that people might point to is, you know, B.J. Raji, who says he's absolutely okay with his role this year, not a lot of rushing opportunities in a contract year. He just kind of said that's a question for somebody else. His job is to be an employee of the Packers. So, but yeah, other than that, Bob, not much dissent, and you've seen that through the years.
At times, yeah. I spoke to an NFL personnel director last week before writing that column, and we talked about Capers. And I said, you know, it's possible Green Bay will fire him. He says, good, we'll take him. You know?
That's right.
He put him in the top 5 to 10 in the league, and he says, Bob, he says, there's no question. This guy will get his pick of jobs. So I don't know.
That's interesting.
As I wrote, if by some chance McCarthy thinks he can do better than Capers after the season, he'd have his pick of coordinator jobs. I really believe he'd had 3 or 4 job offers. I don't care about his age. Who cares about his age? The guy can coach. So what is Green Bay then? What's the pool? You get Rex Ryan after he gets fired? Do you want that?
That's the thing. The grass isn't always greener on the other side for these teams that they make this knee-jerk kind of a change.
But there are young Dick LeBeaus and young Dom Capers out there, you know. I mean, McCarthy might think he can find a great young coach who's a linebacker coach. He could take somebody from his own staff. There's a bunch of qualified, capable assistants on there. I mean, I'm not saying Capers is the only guy, but right now he ranks among the top 5 to 10. I believe that. Certainly among the top 10, I'd say.
So I guess if you were going to point to reasons that he should go, I mean, I guess the postseason collapses 3 out of the last 4 years. Defense.
Bad.
Pretty bad.
Yep.
And what we hear a lot of the time is that the game has, quote-unquote, passed him by. But I don't really buy that either. I mean, when you watch that Cowboys game, as bad as that first half was, they make adjustments. It seems like they do make those mid-game adjustments. And you have to remember with Dom Capers, I mean, look at the youth that he's working with, Bob. I mean, not a lot of talent out there at some certain positions that he's had in years past.
No, there's not. When you really look at it, there's not, yeah. It's a little thin.
Well, let's get into the Steelers. Pull out that depth chart you have there, Bob.
Where is the Steel Curtain depth chart? Well, all right, should we talk about their the defense first? Dick LeBeau, age 76? Yeah, 76 years old. He was Bart Starr's defensive back coach from 76 to 79, I believe. And I believe he was fired. I believe he was let go. Now, LeBeau, when I talked to him about that one time at a Super Bowl, he wouldn't really give me a straight answer. But people here think he was fired. They hired Ross Fichtner, and Ross Fichtner is the guy who said he didn't like Ronnie Lott for that draft in 81, I believe it is. Maybe, I can't remember. Then they took Rich Campbell. Fichtner's son, by the way, is an offensive assistant for the Steelers. Okay, on their front, they're not bad. Brett Kiesel, he probably won't play. He's missed a bunch of games with a foot. But they got 4 big guys. They got Cameron Hayward, former number one pick. Steve McClendon, a nose tackle who Green Bay had in during restricted free agency.
Right, right.
And for a visit. And the feeling was they were going to make him an offer. And then immediately the Steelers signed him to an extension. Ziggy Hood, another former first-round pick. And Al Woods, who replaced the injured McClendon at nose tackle against Cincinnati Sunday night and played great. He was like immovable. He looked like Pickett and Raji when they were really going good. Bengals couldn't do anything with him. They couldn't run the ball. So the Steelers will hunker down, and they'll play pretty good out of that base 3-4 up front. The linebackers, Lamar Woodley's on IR, but he really haven't had him much this year. He's been injured off and on. He hasn't had a great year. So over opposing Don Barkley will be Jason Wirles. Second-round pick 4 years ago, had a bunch of wrist problems, but Wirles has really come into his own the last 5-6 weeks. He's going to come off that edge. He's only 6'1". He's low. He gets leverage, and he can dip and rip, and he's a pretty darn good pass rusher.
He's a DNR guy.
You got her. On the other side, replacing Woodley, Jarvis Jones, the first-round pick from Georgia it is, yeah. Can't run, tests very modestly athletically, but he's a pretty good player.
Well, yeah, the big thing with him was the awful 40 time. How's that speed kind of translated on the football field?
He doesn't look real good right now. He's learning how to play. Yeah. All right, inside, you got a really good player in Lawrence Timmons, number 94. He can do a lot of things. He's good. And you got Vince Williams, a rookie, who sixth-round pick. He's replaced injured Larry Foote. That's their front seven.
Stood out at the Senior Bowl. I remember him making a few plays down in Mobile.
Vince did?
Right, Florida State.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, he wasn't really on a lot of teams.
I don't think he went to the combine.
He wasn't even invited to the combine, but he had a good Senior Bowl week. I think that helped him a little.
Spirited and emotional. Okay, cool. All right, now the secondary. Old. Wow, really old. Ryan Clark in his 12th year. Polamalu at 11. Those are your safeties. Will Allen comes in and plays on passing downs. He's in his 10th year.
Wow.
At corner, you got Ike Taylor in his 11th. You got Cortez Allen in his 3rd. And the nickelback is William Gay in his 7th. It's got to be the oldest secondary in football. Probably not even close.
Are there any good, Bob?
Well, bad weather's coming. And if it's a slow track, that's probably going to help them because it's not going to be a speed game. Polamalu takes chances. We know this. He's going to take chances. He's going to roam the field. He's going to be by the line of scrimmage most of the time. Personally, Tyler, I have nothing to do with the Hall of Fame. I never have, and I never will. I'd have a problem with this guy as a Hall of Fame candidate.
Why is that?
Because he's missed, blown so many things in getting all these huge plays.
Well, while we're on the topic, Bob, why don't we kind of look at the parallel, the comparison with Green Bay as far as that goes. I mean, I just wrote a story for Friday talking to these Packers safeties and big old goose egg interceptions for them this year. They are 2 games away, Bob, from being the first team since at least the mid-1950s for Green Bay to have 0 interceptions at that safety position. We're just talking about the Packers franchise here.
I had no idea that, Tyler. That's a great get on your part.
Well, let's hope I didn't screw that up and some a reader finds out. But, yeah, that's just, you know, going through the media guide and the team archives there. That's what it looks like. But, I mean, talking to these guys in the locker room, what they're saying is the exact opposite, I guess, of what Troy Polamalu has done for all those years in Pittsburgh is they don't want to take any risks. They don't want to take any chances. They really think that straying, quote-unquote, chasing ghosts, as MD Jennings says, is a bad thing. And they have given up some big plays this year, but I guess it could be a lot more if they did this at the expense of trying to get some interceptions. So,
you know, Tyler, I mean, I like guys who play the scheme, the great players then who make their plays within the scheme. You know, Charles Woodson would be another one like Polamalu, right? Mm-hmm. And Ed Reed. I make it my business to find out who's responsible for these things. And Woodson, as I've wrote over and over, and I don't know that people really understand this, that he blew countless plays.
Yeah.
Freelancing. And it's the same as Polamalu. And again, I know Woodson made a ton of plays, but I just like a guy who's fundamentally pure, you know, and then lets his athleticism and his instinct and his guile go to it. Too many blows for me. I'm no football coach, but if I did, I mean, I'd struggle coaching both of them.
Would you struggle putting Charles Woodson in the Hall of Fame too then?
You know, I'm immune from that Hall of Fame thing. I've never even researched. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't think writers should be even involved picking that. I think retired scouts should do it from each club. But I'd certainly think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you going to measure plays given up? Well, it's all in my notebooks. But other than that, people have no recollection of all this. They have no knowledge of this kind of thing.
Okay, you know, we were talking about Troy Polamalu, right?
So when I was doing the Super Bowl book, I interviewed James Farrier, their middle linebacker and their unquestioned team overall leader. And we were talking about Polamalu against the Cardinals against Arizona. And we were talking about his instincts, and he says he does a lot of things that we don't understand. It's all stuff that's going on in his head. He's got an extra vision that we don't have. He sees a different game. And then I said, he's a wild card. And I said, how often is he right, James? And he said, probably about 85% of the time. You take all of the good with a few bad that he has. So he's just, you don't know where he is. Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator at the time for Arizona, now in Pittsburgh, he said he and Kurt Warner sat around for 2 weeks before that Super Bowl, mesmerized by Polamalu, number 43. They just had no rhyme or reason where he was, and they were just scared out of their minds going into that game.
It's fascinating when you talk to guys in the Green Bay locker room that absolutely have to say they stay in their scheme at all times, never want to stray. It's, I think the way I worded it, it's kind of like their morning pledge of allegiance, it seems. They say it so much. But Troy Polamalu, I mean, there's risk-reward involved. Nick Collins had that risk-reward to an extent, although he played within the defense, but he took a chance here and there. So I don't know what's right, what's wrong, but it's an interesting debate to have, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But Bob, that Super Bowl book, on the shelves, it's Christmas time. They can get more stories just like that, correct?
It's down to the bitter end, Tyler. Okay, this is Thursday night.
That's true.
Pat and I, my wife, the tremendous marketing director of this, the Ultimate Super Bowl book. If you guys get a hold of us by Friday night, we'll do everything in our power to get this thing to you by Christmas.
Bob will drive to your house and hand it off.
So send me an email, beamagain@jrn.com. And the Ultimate Super Bowl book might be the latest possible Christmas gift.
And you will personalize, I guess.
Oh, yeah, you got it. Thanks, dude.
You will personalize. Okay, Bob. Now.
What now?
Moving on to the offense.
Okay.
The Steelers' offense. And it kind of starts with a rookie running back, a lot like it does in Green Bay. The Steelers took Le'Veon Bell ahead of Eddie Lacy. I remember sitting down with Eddie Lacy for dinner before training camp. Put three names in front of him, Le'Veon Bell, Monte Ball, and Giovanni Bernard. I said, what's your reaction to these names? And he kind of chuckled and said, you know, they're good guys. Later on in that conversation, he said, you know, he will get to play these teams at some point. He was looking forward to it. He was. He didn't play in that Cincinnati game, had the concussion, but he gets that chance in this game. And the two rookie running backs are both going to be featured in this one. Tell us a little about Pittsburgh's offense. And Bell is a different back from what Green Bay has really faced this year, a threat out of the backfield.
Yeah. I think Lacy has a better offensive line than Pittsburgh, than Bell does. I really do. Let's look at the old line. Mike Adams, a second-round pick, he's been a disaster. And they had to go with Kelvin Beachum, a seventh-round pick in October. And Beachum's kind of stopped the bleeding. He's all right at left tackle. He's short. He's like Mark Tauscher's size, but he's played decent. Left guard, Ramon Foster, he was the right guard against the Packers in Super Bowl 45. He's a big body. He's okay. The center's a problem. You lost the great Marquise Pouncey in the first game with a season-ending injury. Then they went to former Titan Fernando Velasco, and he was pretty competent. And then he wrecked something here a couple weeks ago. So now Cody Wallace, a fourth-round pick in 08, has been... You know, he's hung around the league. He's never even started a game in 5 years until two, 3 weeks ago. So, Raji and Pickett, Bell's going to have problems, I would assume, running inside with Cody Wallace blocking. David DeCastro is a really good right guard. He's their best lineman, top pick in 2012. And Marcus Gilbert is kind of a athletic but soft right tackle. So that's their old line.
What was the last time that the Steelers had a good offensive line? Doesn't it always seem like Ben Roethlisberger's kind of running around for his life. Do we have to go back to Bubby Brister, Bob, and Bam Morris, and Eric Pegram, or whoever the heck was their running back in the 90s?
Eric, E-R-R-I-C. Yeah.
We Darren Perry and the Kevin Green era there.
Yeah. I talked to Jerry Dulac this week of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's convinced no franchise has had more changes in its offensive line in the last 10 or 15 years than Pittsburgh. Even in those Super Bowl years, in the book, I mean, evaluating all that. Stapleton started 1 year at right guard. I mean, just people who, you know, back 1 year they won a Super Bowl with three starters off the bench.
Jonathan Scott, their left tackle, he was kind of flamed out with Detroit and Buffalo, and he ends up starting for him for a while.
And he did. Max Starks, the oafish Max Starks, started a couple Super Bowls. I don't know how they do it, really. But this is a credit to Ben Roethlisberger, let's face it, right?
Yeah. I mean, and Roethlisberger has good numbers this year. What, 28 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, third in the AFC in passer rating. So he's doing something right. He has adjusted to this offensive line.
He's a big man. He's only 31. He's perfectly healthy. He's a threat. He's a good player. All right, the receivers, they're small. They might have the smallest set of starting wideouts in the league. Emmanuel Sanders can fly, and Antonio Brown is really quick as a cat, and he runs pretty darn well, too. Number three, you got a veteran, Jericho Cotchery. It's all right. Roethlisberger, he's got 9 touchdowns. He can't run, but he's a big slot guy. The tight end, Heath Miller. I love Heath Miller. Coming off that ACL last December, but, boy, he's so complete. I think he's a terrific player, and he's starting to regain his form. He's not there yet, you know, but he's getting closer. Okay. And the running back, anything more you want to say about Bell?
Well, I mean, I think that I might start there for Green Bay. I mean, the run defense has had its problems. They really felt that Dallas's success was a result of their zone blocking scheme, and they really did stretch a lot of those plays wide. And you wrote about this as well, where these defensive linemen, they're just not used to shuffling down the line and having to make plays that way. So they're pretty confident that they'll do a good job against Bell in the run game. But as Micah Hyde kind of said himself, Bell's different. You know, he faced him in college in the Big Ten. And a lot like what Jerome Bettis was talking about a couple weeks ago in that story on Lacey, where he said, you know, you have to go low on Le'Veon Bell because he's a big back. So he cut him low on two plays. They ran a toss sweep to him where they kind of isolated Bell on Hyde, head on a head elsewhere. Cut him low, took his legs out 2 times, and the 3rd time, Bell just leaped him. And if you watch the film like you have, I mean, he goes airborne a lot. As Bettis said, you kind of have to have that element of elusiveness as a bigger back where you can play those mind games with the DB. And when they go to cut you, do something different. Where I don't know if Lacey's there yet. I mean, he's doing just fine running over people. But that is something that Bell has. Now, he's only averaging 3.3 yards a carry. So, I mean, let's not make this guy out to be
absolutely
a Hall of Famer. But just kind of a different player if they're facing the sweep.
Yep.
All right. Well, so what do you think? I mean, if you're the Packers defense, do you see an area where you can exploit them? Should they be able to get some pressure this game?
Yeah, you got Clay Matthews against Kelvin Beachum. I mean, depending on the field conditions, he can get after Kelvin Beachum without question, you know. The center's bad. Cody Wallace is a major problem. He's a feisty guy, but, you know, he's not a very good player. And Marcus Gilbert, I mean, he's susceptible too. The guards are pretty solid, so they can do some things. You know, the beauty of the Steeler offense, you really, one back, you got 5 weapons, and he's willing to go to all of them. You got a good tight end, you got 3 good receivers, and you got a running back who has outstanding receiving skills. You can just move it around. They're just going to try to move the ball, and the weather, they'll be impervious to that. They don't care about that.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to snow, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's before we get into questions on Twitter, Bob, I'm going to pose a question you can both answer here. Okay, so we're going to get the final word on Aaron Rodgers tomorrow, Friday. You guys may already know the final verdict before we do here, but saying that he can't play, the Packers win this game and win in the future if what?
If the defense comes to play and plays well late in the year, this is when you win games, and they kind of won the game at the end there on D,
And they kind of won the game at the end against Atlanta with the D. And they have to do it again. That's the way I see it.
If they don't have Aaron Rodgers for an extended period of time, can they do anything in the playoffs?
I just think Rodgers would play in a playoff game by then.
Could be right.
Don't you?
I don't know. I don't know what to make of all this right now. I mean, yeah. It's really interesting. I thought that Tom, our colleague there, had a really interesting analysis on the blog where, you know, it kind of seemed Thursday that Mike McCarthy was putting a little pressure on Ted Thompson and was trying to lobby for Aaron Rodgers to play. I mean, we have to read into things at this point because they obviously know something we don't know. But there may be another variable that hasn't really been looked at.
Yeah.
I guess I agree with you on the defense. I'll just add one extra nugget here. I think that Mason Crosby's value down the stretch is going to be huge, Bob. I mean, if he doesn't play as well as he did the last two games, they lose both of those games. Atlanta, 3 of 3 when it's 0 degrees. Dallas hitting that 57-yarder that could have been good from 60, 62 yards. Mentally, he kind of had to overcome 2012. I mean, that was a rough, rough season for him. And a lot of teams, the New Orleans Saints just did it with Hartley. They would have discarded their kicker through something like that. But the Packers stuck with him. He overcame those demons that he had. And he's having a career year right now, Bob. He is absolutely feeling it. So I think in tough weather that Green Bay is going to face these final two games, sure as heck helps to have a kicker who right now isn't missing at all. So we'll see. All right, well, let's get into the Twitterites, Bob. What do you say?
Super.
Okay, this one from Chris Schweitzer. He asks, why is Dayton Jones seeing the field less? Poor play? Too small? Should we be getting more? Or is this the standard rookie learning curve? Caught up with Dayton Jones briefly this week, and he wants to play more. You definitely get that vibe from Dayton Jones. He says you learn by playing, and it's tough for him to sit out like he is. You had his snap count the past few weeks. I mean, he's averaging about 8 to 10 snaps a game the last 3 weeks as Josh Boyd's role kind of increases. But he also kind of put it on himself. He says he has a lot to learn and that he's not there yet. I mean, you watch him closely. I guess, to me, it doesn't seem like he's playing poorly, like a complete flop by any means. He's had some nice rushes, but there has to be a reason that his role has been minimized to what it is.
Yeah, he's just penciled into this sub defense, and he's shown some speed. He's shown some pursuit. He's got to just work on everything, all parts of his game.
Yeah, I don't think that it was a bad pick. I think that he's got some potential, but maybe it's just not showing up as quick as a lot of people had hoped. Okay, all right, let's get into another one here. Okay, Dan Kowalski, you know, off of this, he asked, can you evaluate Josh Boyd's performance?
Well, not really. We've only seen him for about 60 snaps. He's a big guy, and he moves pretty good. Beyond that, I just haven't seen enough.
He's a little wider than Dayton Jones, and it seems he can play the run and the pass.
Right.
Jeff Nelson, our buddy Jeff.
Okay, Jeff. Good man. What do you got, Jeff?
What is the bigger need in the offseason, safety, linebacker, D-line?
Safety, D-line, or what?
Linebacker.
Linebacker.
It's got to be safety.
They got a lot of needs, Jeff. You say safety?
I would have to say safety.
All right.
All right. Okay, I like this one, Bob.
Who we got?
David Kaiser. All right,
Dave.
Is Bob ecstatic about Jolly being out for the year? Just for the possibility that the Packers may pick up Philip Merlin, your guy, Phil.
That could be the Howard Green of 2013.
Poor Howard. Give Howard a call. Bring him back.
What a man he was.
He was.
Love Howard.
One of the more enjoyable guys to talk to in there.
He hit Big Ben, didn't he, in Super Bowl 45?
He did. You could say that was the play of the game.
He rammed Ben over that guard. The Samoan guard, I can't remember who it was. The big left guard.
We'll come to you. All right. Adam Check, he asks, is Bob secretly a huge Slayer fan like John Clayton? You know those commercials, right, Bob? with John Clayton?
The guard was Chris Kimoatu.
Okay. Sorry about that. I checked the Ultimate Super Bowl book.
There it is. Get your copy today at bmcgann@jrn.com.
Plug, plug. Okay.
Now, Slayer? You see the commercials with John Clayton, right?
Never.
You haven't?
I don't watch much TV, guy. Like, none.
Do you watch any TV at all? Like sitcoms, TV shows, anything, Bob?
Zero.
None. You have zero time for a TV show.
Zero.
None.
I never watch local news. I'll tape the Michigan football games because it's my alma mater. I'll tape them.
Which, by the way,
on Saturday night sometime.
Our media pal Justin Felder has turned Bob McGinn into a verb when you TiVo a game and you watch it later in the day.
Justin.
Yes, he did.
And in January, I'll start taping Michigan basketball games, printing out my rosters for the two clubs off the net and watching those games on tape delay. But other than that, I don't watch it.
I think you
I don't have time.
Yeah. The off season.
I'd rather read, Tyler.
Oh, listen.
You know?
Right. Get off your high horse, Bob.
Yeah, right.
Get off.
Elitist.
You elitist. Okay. Kyle Burchart, good question. He asks, he says, I thought that David Bakhtiari had a solid game against DeMarcus Ware. He has fared well as a rookie. All right, he asks, where do you see Balaga next year? But rather than, you know, talk about next year, he brings up Bakhtiari. What do you think about his game against Ware? I know that Ware is not what he was a few years ago, but pretty much a non-factor as far as pressuring Matt Flynn. They did move on both sides.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ware, among all the guys Bakhtiari's faced, I'd say Ware is in the bottom third.
Hmm.
I really do. And he's faced some really good players. Bakhtiari had some bad plays in this game. And the ball was out. He was lunging or ducking or just beaten by Ware. And the ball just happened to come out. Or Sitton would come over and blast him in the, you know, the double team situation with his head on a swivel. So I didn't think Bakhtiari played one of his finest games.
Okay.
I mean, he's had better ones, I think. He was fine, though.
All right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, what do you say? Any final thoughts?
Not really. Bad weather for Sunday, aren't I? That's the forecast.
Bad weather.
All right.
Bring on the snow. And Christmas is right around the corner. So, from Bob's kitchen to yours, everybody, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And we'll close with the late, great Ray Price.
Ray
Mr. Price. Ray Price.
Signs and by a road.